Shalom Aleichem, everyone. Okay, we're going to do, starting a series, I didn't send out the title, we're going to do Hilchot Shabbat, some ideas of the Malachas of Shabbat, and some things about the Mitzvot and Tfilot of Shabbat, okay? The two main things we're going to focus on tonight are, I think, great examples, paradigms of things about Shabbat. One about the positives, the Mitzvot, and one of the things about the Malachot. So we're going to do Muksa for the Malachot. It's not really a Malacha, but we'll talk about what Muksa includes and what doesn't include. We're dealing with Muksa and all the categories. What are the rules? And I know we did this a different time, but this time we're going to do more in depth. We'll put the Halachot first. And then we're going to also deal with Me'in Sheva, one of the Brachot that we make on Shabbat. We'll talk all about that Friday night. In the Friday night Tefillah, what is that Tefillah about? Why is the text, what's the text different? What inspiring messages we're going to take from it, okay? Those are the topics, Muksa and Me'in Sheva. Two things that are very different than most other areas of Halakha. So let me ask like this. First question, what level does Muksa play? What role is Muksa? Is Muksa from the Torah? Muksa Derabanan? Is it Minhag? What do we say from there? What level is Muksa? Sal, you want to go for it?
Sorry, Sal, go for it.
You can just speak out of Isaac's one. Just say, you scream it and I'll hear.
I think from the rabbis.
Excellent. It's from the rabbis. Dear Rabbanan. Excellent. Muksa is not from the Torah. It's not minhag, it's real from the rabbis, from the Gemara, all over from the Gemara. Does anybody know, there's very, very old sources that go back to Tanakh about where the Gemara quotes. It might be connected to Muksa. First, the Gemara in Pesachim, in fact, even says, maybe Muksa is deraita, it's from the Torah, because it says, v'achino tasher yaviu. You have to prepare all the food. If you don't prepare something that's considered undesignated, not prepared, it's muksa. Where it says, using muksa might be deraita. That's not the opinion that we follow. But there is one opinion like that in the Gemara, one opinion like that in the Rishon and the Meiri holds like that, lahalacha, that consuming muksa is deraita. Moving muksa is derabanan. We don't hold like that at all. We hold it's all rabbinic, all from the rabbis. However, it goes very far back. The Gemara in Shabbat tells us it was in this Nehemiah. Nehemiah and Ezra, this is Mefurash and Psukim, that there was a breach in religiosity when the Jews came back from Bayit Sheni. The second Beit HaMikdash was just being built, and Nehemiah was really trying to make a stronghold in Yerushalayim, and he made a fine on all the Jews that were not living in Yerushalayim to everybody to come to help build the walls, okay? And everybody donated time and effort to build the walls in Yerushalayim, and they warded off enemies, a whole story. That's what most of Nehemiah and Ezra is about, is the rebuilding of worrying about Yerushalayim. Ezra dealt with the spiritual revival. He gave Musar to the people. He told people that were intermarried, they had to get divorced. A very, very serious book, Ezra and Nehemiah, very real, practical, political Torah life in Israel, with only 40,000 Jews in Israel, a very small community. But it says in the Gemara, that in the Psukim, it says also that Ezra gave them Musar, that he saw that Jews were buying and selling on Shabbat. And he started telling them, how could you possibly do this? And it says that he told them they have to be very, very careful about Shabbat. That's what all it says in the Psukim. It doesn't say what things he told them they have to do. So first of all, the Gemara learned for sure, you can't do business on Shabbat. Transactions are asur on Shabbat. Question, is doing business on Shabbat from the Torah or rabbinic? What do we say? If someone closes the business deal on Shabbat, or they have, this is much more complicated, but they have a website that they let people buy stuff there. This is probably everybody today. You have something selling on Amazon, or you have a good website that's whatever, that's selling your electronics or your clothing, or you have clients, whatever, that are going onto your website and using services, and they're getting charged per service or something. So general, let's just start in general. Where is the idea of transactions come from? Sal or Jake, you have an idea? Are they from the Torah or from the rabbis doing business on Shabbat? Say again?
I would say it's Mukseh. It's the Rabbanan.
It is definitely Darabanan, that's true. Doing business on Shabbat, going to the store, going to Dunkin' Donuts, or I don't know what's in Seattle, what ice cream stores or whatever you got there. You go to the local grocery, CVS, I don't know what you have, and you go buy a soda, and you say, I can't pick up my cash. Can you take the money out of my you know, account, pay for me, or I'll pay you after Shabbat? So the answer is you're not allowed to do transactions on Shabbat. And that's rabbinic. There are like four reasons why you're not allowed to do transactions. Mukseh is not directly one of them. It is mukseh to take money. Money is mukseh. So we're doing mukseh tonight. Money is always mukseh. That's true. It's like rocks and sticks and stones that don't have any purpose. Money also has no purpose on Shabbat. Not that money is not useful, but it has no purpose on Shabbat because you can't transact. Now, the four reasons, just go through, run through them very quickly. It could be it's Chatan Sofer said, it will say the Dirabanan. The Rashi says it's like Daber Davar. You're not supposed to speak about business. Certainly, you're not supposed to do business on Shabbat. Another thing, Daber Davar is from Yeshayahu, that we say in the Kiddush, Karat Shabbat Oneg, Kiddush Shem Mufubad, Chibetomas Adrachecha, Mosachat Daber Davar, Kumsoch Hasachad Daber Davar. Right? Atzid Negal Hashem. That's the Pesukim we say in Kiddush. That's from Yeshayahu. Daber Davar is we speak about Shabbat. We don't speak about business. So we can't speak about business, so we can't do business. That's one reason. Can't do business. Another reason is that Shema Yichtov, maybe you're going to write it down. Because the rabbi said, if you're going to do business, you're going to write. Okay, all these things. Another one is, it's the Chatam Sofer says, it's biblical because of Shabbat, you're not resting. If you're doing business, you're not resting. Okay. And then so different Rashi says, another reason is Ezra. Ezra came up with the idea, you're not allowed to do business. And his proof is, it says in the Pasuk. He got upset with them. They were busy doing business on Shabbat. Okay, that's possible. But that's what the Rashi in Beitza says. The Gemara on Shabbat says, Nehemiah also, you know what he also decided? When he saw people working on Shabbat, he made a chumrah. He said, from now on, no mukseh. And not only that, he was super machmir. He said, you can't move anything on Shabbat at all except food, clothing, and maybe forks and knives, and sfarim. That's it. You can move food, clothing, and sfarim. Food, clothing, sfarim. That's it. So you can't move a table, a chair, a toy. You can't move anything. You can't move, your hands are tied. You can't do anything on Shabbat. You could eat, you could sleep, you could drink, you could talk. That's about it. You can't do anything. So that was in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. It says there in the Gemara. So Rav Shechter commented like on this Gemara that sometimes when we find that there's kulot, well, how do we figure out what we should do? Should we be more mekel? Should the rabbis be more mekel, more machmir? So you see, Ezra's policy when people are leniencies, we got to give them throw the book at them. We got to give them a lot of chumras. And guess what? It says in the Gemara, it was very successful. He saw the Jews stopped into business. They started keeping Shabbat very well. And guess what? They said, we'll repeal the gezira mukseh. Normal mukseh, they're going to be very mekel mukseh. And what was the conclusion? They went back. They were a little bit more mekel. to allow using klishamachto laheter, things that you use only for heter. So, well, that's a cups and plates, and we'll talk about what other things, games and toys, other things for heter. Then they said, not only that, we're also going to be matir things machto leisur. And they kept adding more things that are matir, and we'll talk about tonight what's the conclusion about all the halachot of mukseh that come from Ezra. But yes, bottom line, mukseh is rabbinic, okay? Now, okay. Let's say like this. Is it really mukseh when I tell my kid, when I tell Aaron Yisrael, don't turn on the lights, it's mukseh. Is it really mukseh? Is it accurate to call everything mukseh? Let's say more specifically. Is picking up a pen and pencil mukseh? Let's take the pen and pencil. Is picking up a pen and pencil mukseh?
Technically, just picking it up? Yeah. You can touch it, but you can't pick it up.
Who is that? Sorry, was that Papa?
Yeah, that was Papa.
So Dr. Levy is correct. Picking it up is mukseh. Touching it is not mukseh. The pressing the button on the wall is just a throwaway, yes. The way that we teach mukseh sometimes, the way that we speak about mukseh sometimes is just a catch-all for all of Hilchot Shabbat. It's not the accurate way to say it, for sure. But picking up a pen is mukseh. But in fact, although we call that moksa, picking up a pen, and Dr. Levy's right, however, it's not so simple. Let's take a look at the Rishonim I have here on the screen. They debate this question. Picking up a pen or a laptop or a phone or many other things we'll talk about are actually just big discussions, big machloka. And on the top, we've heard of them, there's the Baal Hamor. Anybody know who the Baal Hamor is, what he comments on? What does he write about? Anybody ever heard of Baal Hamor? Yeah, Isaac?
Definitely heard of the Baal Hamor. He comments on
the Rif, on the bottom of the Rif. The Rif was the Gadol Hador in the last after the Gaonim, the beginning of the 1000s. He was writing the summary of Shulchan Aruch, summary of the Gemara to write the Halakha, and that's what the Rif did. The Baal Hamor came along when he was like 17 and decided to write a Pirush on all Shas, arguing on many, many things in the Rif. And he was at the days of, basically at the days of Rashi. The Baal Hamor is very old, basically at the time of the Rambam. He had a Chavruta that's very famous, the Ravid. The Ravid commented after the Baal Hamor, and he said, some of the comments are, he stole that from me. He was my Chavruta, that comment he took from me. It's my idea. And half the comments are, he's wrong about this. And really, the Rif is right. And half the comments are, no, the Rif is right, and the Baal Hamor is wrong. Everybody, the Rif is wrong, and the Baal Hamor is wrong. Everybody's wrong. This same Ravid comments on a very, very famous, besides on the Rif, he has one other place he comments. Does anybody know where the Ravid comments on, who he comments on besides the Rif?
Rambam.
On Rambam, of course, there's the same Ravid as the very classic famous Ravid in the days of the Baalei Tosfot. He commented on the Rambam. Okay, that's the end of 1100s, beginning of 1200s. That's the Ravid after the days already of Rashi. Rashi and Rambam, the beginning of the 1100s. Anyway, I'm a little bit off. The end of the 1100s is Rashi and the Rambam. Another 50 years later is when you have the Baal Hamor, the next generation, the Baal Hamor and the Ravid. Anyway, so the Ramban, that's already another 50 years later, the middle end of 1200s, the Ramban was appalled. How could the Baal Hamor, such a young man, write such a harif letter, such a harif attack on all the things of the Rif? How could he do that? So he wanted to defend the Rif, and he wrote Milchama Hashem, War of God, to defend the Rif. Okay, that's a famous commentary of the Ramban. Anyway, but in one of the comments of the Baal Hamor is one of the comments in the beginning of Beitza. Beitza is not very much about Muksa, and he makes a comment over there. He says, when we're including which shitah to talk about Muksa, Beit Shammai is very lenient. It's going to be lenient on Muksa in some areas, the Gemara says. And it says, Beit Shammai adiv mi Rabbi Shimon de'elei Muksa b'dor shemalato li'isur apil sor gufo. Fine. He's saying, I'm pulling a comment out of a whole chunk here, but for the one point that he says, the Muksa, the way that Rabbi Beit Shammai looked at Muksa included something that's from Kli Shemalachto Isur. Okay, Kli Shemalachto Isur is included in Muksa. And the Ravid says, wait a second. Amar Avram calls it Shibush. It's a big mistake. Everything over here is a big mistake. The Dabar Shemalachto Isur Mash Isra Bo Lo Bo Lo Mishum Muksa. You're right. The pen is a sur. You can't write with a pen. You're right, you can't go on the computer on Shabbat. You're right, you can't call on the phone on Shabbat. What does that do with Muksa, says the Ravid? What is Muksa? It's like it's designated, I'm not using, like a rock. There's no point to a rock. There's no point of a dollar on Shabbat. That's what Muksa is. That's the machloket over here. Now, did the Ravid really believe that there's no such concept of Muksa by a pen and pencil? So just to clarify, the answer is no. There's many Gemarot about this. He had to accept there's such an idea, but he basically said there are two things. And with this, I think we're going to now get into the halakha. There's something called muksa. That's we can call severe muksa, serious muksa. It's a category of things I'm not using at all. Rocks, sticks, stones, things that have no use. Dollar bills, things that have no use. We'll talk about a lot of examples. And then there are kelim, utensils, things that have a purpose, but I'm supposed to refrain from using a little bit because the amount of use I have from it is not very great on Shabbat. For example, a scissor, a hammer, a screwdriver, what do you do with that on Shabbat? Very little. There's hardly anything you can do with it. What can you do with a scissor on Shabbat that's mutar? Any answers? What do you say with a scissor?
Knock a nail in,
that's not Kevin Patich, no? That'd be cutting nails? I don't hear what you said. Cutting what?
I think you could like knock in a nail a little bit.
You can't knock in nails, but you can crack.
I would say for food, to cut, oh. I don't know, if you crack have a lot nut, of grapes or something.
Yeah, crack a nut.
Cracking nuts. Well. You can use a hammer to crack nuts. But simple with a nut, with a scissor, you can cut a bag of food open. You have like
popsicles. Open. I was saying for food.
Colorful popsicles, ice pops. You want to cut them open? You cut them open. Yes, Jake.
Yes, I have a question. So let's say take the scissor. Are you allowed to open a new package that arrives on Shabbat?
Oh, you got it mailed to you on Shabbat. So the answer is, generally speaking, yes, but it depends. It does not depend on muksa. It's not muksa. The food's not muksa. The package you got is not muksa. Even if it chidush, even if you got something like a fan or a phone, something that's electric, something that's klishma totally isur, a pen, a pencil, something that I usually use for isur, still when it comes to when you get a brand new on Shabbat, that's not muksa because it was never used. If you have a klish matol isur, it was never used for isur, so it's like klish matol heter. You can move for any reason. Even mechamel latzalion, you don't want to get stolen. That's in terms of muksa. In terms of carrying, okay, if there's a eruv, you bring it inside, no eruv, whatever. That has to do with everything else. The last, though, the big issue, it has to do with tchum. Tchum is if they brought it from outside of, in some sense, outside the city. Now, the city keeps on going, extending as long as there's sort of buildings every 70 amot. So it's a very complicated question how far that goes. In New York, it's extremely far. Once you square off the city, it goes from all the five boroughs in New York until halfway through New Jersey. I don't know how far in Seattle it goes, but most of the time when cities are next to each other, it goes through the city, it goes to pretty far. I don't know to all the suburbs. So I'm not sure how far it extends. In terms of packages coming in, if the package was close by, so then it probably was tchum before Shabbat, before it was probably ready in the tchum by Friday night. But if it came from far away and then was overnighted and it was outside the tchum, so you can't move more than 4 amot. But the good news is if they bring it into your house, then the whole house is like 4 amot. If it's on the porch, it's also like part of the house. But if it's by a front doorstep, it's not on the porch, not in an enclosed area, not in three walls, so then you can't move more than 4 amot. So that's a separate issue with tchum. Tchum is a separate important question. It's hard sometimes to figure out if something's a tchum or not. You can sometimes look like where the last stop was on Amazon or where it is, and you can guess based on that. Okay. Anyway, though, so the scissors are things we don't usually use because there's not so much to do with them. But you could find a use. You could cut the package is open. So, just the last thing about opening packages that you get on Shabbat, it's mutar for food. Or for things related to food, like opening for silverware, that's fine, opening packages. Opening packages for things you're not using on Shabbat, that's a whole different discussion. And for clothing that you're going to use on Shabbat, also mutar. Opening a package on Shabbat for not Shabbat use, generally would not do. That's a separate discussion. Okay, anyway, though, back to mukseh. Here I'm going to share the screen. We're going to now introduce the categories to make it very, very clear and a bunch of examples, okay? Okay, here is my screen. We're talking now about category number one. Muksa, this is severe muksa, the real deal muksa, the full-blown muksa, has no use. It's called muksa machma gufo. This is absolute muksa. What does that include? So examples of here, animals, you have, like we have the sticks and stones, but also coins. Animals is a big machloka. What about pets? Are pets pet? Well, I'll get to it in a second, just to make it clear before we get to too many examples. Bicycles, no, I would not agree with bicycles. I would say bicycles are mutar. I know I wrote the stuff on Halachopedia. Some of it's based on Ashkenazic sources. So this is from Rav Moshe. Okay, this is not Rav Avadya. But we have here glue. Insecticides is also not muksa. Glue has muksa because there's no use in Shabbat. Money has no use. rocks and nuyas. Nutshells are not edible, have no use. Sticks, stones, fine. Toothpaste is also not muksa, fine. Anyway, what about pets? Are pets muksa? Animals are generally muksa. What do we say about pets?
I would say yes, but I don't. I've seen in practice people playing with their pets, but I always thought they were muksa. But then you also have halachot about how to feed them first on Shabbat and whatnot. So how would you be able to feed it if it was muksa?
These are good questions. So, excellent questions.
I don't know the answer. I think they are muksa. That's the final answer I'd give, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so I'll make it, the simple answer is you're right, but the complicated answer is there's a big machloka. There's a tshuva. So really, domesticated household animals are not so common. We're not a thing. We're not an issue 2,000 years ago. It wasn't something that the days of Chazal people had. They didn't have pet dogs and cats. They had farm animals. They had work animals. That was what people used to have. Used to have sheep and goats and chickens maybe living in their living room, but they didn't have any pets. The farm animals that they had were just purely functional. But it's not that pet dogs didn't exist. You know, you can look online. The history of such a thing goes back to like Rome. It goes back for centuries. Definitely in the days of Rishonim, it did exist. Very uncommon. Rich people, some people would have a pet. It did exist. Not so common, though, but it did exist. Now, it became more common, for example, in the days of the Rosh, there was a letter written by the Marach Ur Zaruah, the son of the Ur Zaruah. Ur Zaruah was one of the Baalei Tosfot in Germany. He wrote a letter saying, what do you say to the Rosh? And he said, the Rosh Ravein Usher, he said, what do you say about a singing bird? What's that? I'm trying to remember. Whatever. One of the birds, like a parakeet, but it was a bird that they had as a domesticated, simple animal. And he said, it's not like the animals of Chazal because we keep it around to play with. We like to talk to it. We like to hear it sing. So what do you say about that? Is that mukse? Or it's like a toy? Just like a toy is not mukse, we have a use for it. So too, this should not be mukse. So the Rosh said back, a two-line tshuva, he said, no. He said, says the Gemara, you're not allowed to use animals on Shabbat. Sorry, mukse. And he said, oh, maybe they'll be used. He said, no, animals are very serious, very chamur, and therefore there's no distinction. He didn't really fully address the question 100%, but he did say animals are very serious. The Marach Ur Zaruah wrote back, this is the last letter we have. We have his response is, but it doesn't make sense. It says in the Gemara, they're mukse because they have no use. You can't work the animals on the farm on Shabbat. But today we can play with the pets. And he says, I'll bring you an example that something doesn't have so much of a use, but still not mukse. For example, the Gemara says, this is very practical. If you have nice flowers, you have a vase on the table, or someone buys a bouquet of flowers and you put it on the table. Is that mukse? He proves from the Gemara, it's absolutely not. They used to only have a hadassim, okay? But his proof, it's the same thing hadassim as beautiful flowers. You get roses all the same. If you take a bunch of hadassim that are cut off the tree and you put them on your table, they smell nice, or with roses, they're not mukse. Why are they not mukse? Because they smell nice, they look nice, they're a use. You designate them for Shabbat to be used. So says the Marach Ur Zaruah, same thing with pets. The thing is, we have no response to the Rosh, probably because the mail got lost or because he passed away, or because we have no idea what happened to the response. And this conversation is basically the only conversation in the Rishonim about pets. Why? Because basically it was not so common that people had pets. It's not in Shulchan Aruch. This Rosh is not found in Halachot of the Rosh. It's only in Tshuva. And it was not presented in Shulchan Aruch. There is, in the 1600s, it came up again, the Halachot Ketanot. 1600s, he wrote, Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, he said he thought it was Mutar. And then back and forth. It came out only about 50 years ago that there became a real question in the post scheme. Rishon Zalman Orbach from Eretz Yisrael, he said, look, we have the Marach Ur Zaruah. He's a good reason. We should agree with him. And basically said we should be able to rely on that opinion that pets are not muksa. Rav Moshe Feinstein said, no, basically, look, it says in Shulchan Aruch animals are muksa. Nobody made any distinctions. And it doesn't seem like pets are really designated for any particular purpose. Animals an animal, or even if they are designated, we should assume that they stay as muksa. Based on maybe what the Rosh said, unclear. He leaves as muksa. different gedolim said different things, but that's what the two main gedolim talked about. This said, Rav Avadya has long tshuva. He comes out, even though many areas Mekel here is machmir. He says the pets are mux. Others say though it's a big discussion. Rabbi Tandler, a lot of people say no. Rav Moshe also was lenient on pets, and so it's a big question. What did Rav Moshe actually say? In the tshuva, it's written it's asur, but it's if you look in the tshuva, it has in like Rashi's script and other script, it's written he was talking about farm animals, even though the person asked him was asking about pets. It's a big machloka. The part of the issue is Rabbi Shimon Eider, I think the one who asked the question and the one who wrote down the answers for Rav Moshe. He said he was talking about pets, and so that's why he wrote it and he showed it to Rav Moshe. But then the family says Rav Moshe didn't say that. He said other things, and I think Rabbi Eider already passed away, so we can't really ask so much exactly all about it. But there's a big machloka, big machloka. What did Rav Moshe say? Bottom line, Rav Avadya was machmir. He said, "Look, who's heard of the Marhor Zeru? Who's heard of the Rush? Everybody knows the Rush. So therefore, we should be machmir on pets." Now, in practice, it's not so easy to be machmir if someone's very, very serious. They have to have a pet, or whatever they feel they have such a need, or they do have a pet. It's very, very hard to be machmir on pets if you already have one in your house. Now, Ravadja is makel for a seeing eye dog. Okay, if you have fish, there's nothing wrong with having fish in the house. You don't need to move them. Fine, those pets are not doing anything. But if you have a different animal in your house, so it's not so simple to get around. Okay, Rav Avadya gives you kulot if you need to feed the animal. So in terms of feeding animals, if you have a pet in your house, you could feed the animals. It doesn't starve. Of course, that's mutar. Sar ba'al chayim, you're allowed to save an animal if it's trapped. But to take it for a walk, Rav Avadya would not allow. Playing with it, he would not allow. Petting it, machloket. Petting is a machloket if the hair is part of the animal, not part of the animal, big machloket. Bottom line, Rav Avadya would probably be machmir on the petting. But Nevinsal, I don't know, he's a big gadol in Yerushalayim, and he was the Rav of Yerushalayim for many years. He learns often in Hakotel. So anybody who's ever been, I don't know, Dubin was there, Ez was there. You've seen Rav Nevinsal. He was a chavruta with Rav Shlomo Zalman Orba. So he holds that the pets are not so muksa, but he says maybe everybody should agree by the petting. Petting should be mutar. It's a big machloka about petting. Fine. Anyway, what I would say is, look, if someone's trying to follow Rav Avadya, yes, this is an area best to be machmir not to have a pet, and that you're going to walk on Shabbat or have an anjudu or whatever. But yes, practice with me, it's extremely hard to be machmir if you actually have a pet. Someone who feels like psychologically, whatever, they absolutely need a pet. So probably Rav Avadya might be Mekel, but yes, the other postgame are leaned about this, and it's a big discussion. That's the pet story. Any questions on that topic? Okay, then we're going to go to other sections of Muksa. So Muksa, first Muksa was, and I want to bring up as many as we could to make it clear. Muksa as clear as possible, because Muksa, there's a million things in the world, and we have to get to everything as much as possible. This next category is Muksa. This is not 100% Muksa. This is like, so to speak, partial Muksa. This is Kli Shemalat Elisur, things that you don't use 100% of the time, but only for Isur things. We usually use it for something that's not allowed in Shabbat, and therefore the halacha is now you can't move it at all. The first category, you can't move at all. That's the rule. Muksa, rocks, sticks, and stones, you can't move. There are kulod, you can move with your foot, with your elbow. We'll talk about those soon, but you can't move them normally. The second category, though, is klishma toisur. What does that include? Many, many electronics. The phone, we'll leave out laptop for a moment, but a phone and toys that make noise, flashlights, those are klishma toisur. I have here a few examples. Candles, I don't know, lipstick, nails, those things are klishma toisur. Okay, matches, those are probably klishma toisur. Fine. There's a machloket about those, but that's the ikar is, the revived holes, those are klishma toisur. What would we say about tefillin? I know tefillin is on this list. What do we think? Is tefillin muksa or not muksa? What do we say?
Oh, yes,
Muksa. You say yes, Muksa, okay? You say like it says on Alachopedia, it's Klishma Tol Isur, or even more serious than that? Is it like a rock?
No. Because you wouldn't be able to designate it like a rock.
I remember hearing the reason is because of the otiyot or something, and Shabbat has an ot, and tefillin is an ot that we don't need because of Shabbat, but I feel like that's separate. That's not what you said.
Okay, okay, that's an answer. So we have one vote. It's in between. Fine. Sal, Jake, what do you say?
I think it falls under the category of no use on Shabbat because we don't have any
Okay, even more machmir. Okay, maybe it's mukseh. There's no use for it on Shabbat. Anybody else? Sal, you want to say? You're agreeing with your brothers. Okay. So here we go. In the Shulchan Aruch, in fact, he says it's not mukseh at all. The Rabbi Yosef Karo says that tefillin is klishmal to leheter. So why? So we don't wear tefillin on Shabbat. That's true. Why don't we wear tefillin on Shabbat? Ask Isaac. We'll learn about that a different day. That's what it says. It says in the Gemara what Isaac was saying about it, that he told tafoh ben inecha. It's considered odhi ben inecha. Whatever. It's considered a sign. And so too Shabbat is a sign. So we don't need another sign on Shabbat. Fine. We don't wear it. But if you want to wear it, you could. That's the Shulchan Aruch. Then the Magen Avraham Taz says, what does Shulchan Aruch say? How could you say that? Is it mutar to wear a tefillin on Shabbat, guys? No. Is it mutar even on Chol HaMoed to wear a tefillin? So as it says, a Sephardi guy says, I'm going to Ashkenazi Shul and I want to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed so I don't stick out. Am I allowed to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed?
No, even a Loti Goredu, you would not be allowed.
All right, so leaving out Lotigodu, I know I touched a serious issue. Lotigodu is to make machloke, you shouldn't stand out. But besides that issue...
Yeah, mafrish bin hatzibur, you'd be the only one not wearing tefillin.
Yeah, so...
I think it's Zal says wear tefillin if you're Zal in that situation.
Okay, so not to stick out is a big topic. I'll leave that for now. However, many times... Shuls, a lot of shuls have some Sephardim and some Ashkenazim. So it's not long to go to if you're not the only one. I'll say it like that. But in terms of the question, you're not supposed to, the Zohar says someone who wears tefillin is a big chidush. Someone who wears tefillin on Shabbat and tefillin on Shabbat or Chol Moed any day that's holy. I think it says like Chayav Mitah. It says a very, very serious thing. You cannot wear tefillin on Shabbat. That's what it says in the Zohar because it's degrading Hashem's keter. Hashem says we has a crown on Shabbat, and if we put on our tefillin, we're saying, look, the crown that Hashem has, Hashem is giving us on Shabbat, is not special. We need to put on our own crowns. So that says the Zohar, you're not allowed to do that. You have to wear the crown of Kadosh Baruch Hu's Zochas in Shabbat, and we can't put on tefillin. That's what the Zohar learned. Not that we don't just wear, it's that we're not supposed to wear. Okay, now... leaving out Lotigodu, we don't even wear it on Chol HaMoed. Okay. Says the Magen Avraham and the Taz, they say, wait a minute, why would tefillin on Shabbat not be mukseh then? So in fact, they say tefillin on Shabbat is klishmal to lisur. Now, why don't they say it's fully mukseh? Let's say the Brisker Rav, the uncle of, let's say, Rav Soloveitchik, there, or Shachter, they say tefillin is totally mukseh, 100% mukseh. 100% mukseh, can't do anything with it. So why didn't everybody else say that? The answer is because they say, yes, you're not going to put them on. You're not going to put them on your head, not on your arm. But you know what you can do? You can look at them. You can teach halachot about them. You can look at them and look at how there's a shin on the outside, how we write the shin with four different spots on the rosh on one side and three legs. On the other side, you can look at how the yud is written with the knot. You could see all the halachot, how to make tefillin. You could talk about. So therefore, some say it's not mukseh, and there are other reasons. But that's all suffice for now. That it's still clean, still a useful thing. It's not like a rock. Halacha l'maaseh, Ravida says ikar adin is like Shulchan Aruch. It's really not mukseh, even though we follow the Zohar. We don't wear the tefillin Shabbat, but that's one opinion. Something derban alakel. You can include the other opinion to say it's not mukseh. That's one thing. The other thing is, but they said it should be machmir not to try to move it, except like klishma tol yisur. So this is very common. Let's say you're going to Beit Halevi and someone on the seat left a tefillin. Are you allowed to move the tefillin and sit on the seat? Yes.
For sure.
Oh, so Isaac's saying that it's Kli Shema Tol Isur. You can move it. Very good. Now, what happens if it's not in your seat, it's just sitting on the table in the shul, and you don't want it to be there, you don't like how it's sitting on the table? Are you allowed to move it? You don't need to put your siddur there. You can put your siddur to the side. You don't need to sit there. Are you allowed to move it? And maybe you want to make the shul look a little nicer. You want to move it to the side. Are you allowed to? Or just for your convenience, you want to move it to the side. Are you allowed to do that?
There's no tzorech, so why would you be allowed to?
So that's the machloket we have over here. The Kaf HaChaim, by the Mishnah Berurah, and we're saying Magen Rav and Taz, they're machmir. They say it's klish mal tuli sur. You only can move it for the need of the tzorech makom and tzorech gufo. If you need it, or you need the space. But if you don't need to, then you shouldn't move it. However, Ravine holds the cars like Shachan Aruch, and therefore the main opinion is it's klish mal tuli sur. You can move it for any purpose. That's the main opinion. My opinion is, yes, the Ravid is telling you Ikara didn't, but he says to try to be machmir if you could. So therefore, if it's to make the shul look nice and it's mafri, it's bothering you, then yes, it's mutar to move. You can follow Shulchan Aruch. However, if it's not a big deal, then yes, you try to be machmir on that question. Once I was in a shul and I saw a tefillin on the floor. So what do we say about that? Are you supposed to pick them up on Shabbat?
You mean on the floor? For sure.
Why? Yeah, but I don't need to stand. I don't need to sit there.
If it's on the floor, it's kavod for the tefillin. There's a cloth inside of there. They're kadosh.
They are kadosh. You're right. Rav Moshe says, I think about if you see a mezuzah in like a garbage and discussing. So he talks about discussing borer. Fine, that might not be a good example. Rav Moshe has another case. He has if someone had left on a sefer. Something that was not kadosh. They left, a wrapper, a piece of garbage on top of a chumash. They left a piece of garbage on a chumash, and the garbage was there from Friday. And now I'm on Shabbat. It's mukseh. I'm allowed to pick up the mukseh for the sefer to make the sefer look nice, so it shouldn't be disrespectful in the shul to have the garbage sitting on top. They left a banana peel on the chumash.
What does that have to do? Would that be creating a basis before Shabbat? Because it was sitting like that since before.
Yeah, it might be. Ramosha says maybe something that's hekdesh is not shayach to basis. A big chiddush discussing. He says you cannot move it just because you want to make the sefer look nice. You can't move moksa. Okay. However, even though Ramosha said that, two things are not pashut. One thing is, first of all, in terms of the tefillin on the floor, you can follow Rav Avadya. Rav Avadya said you can move the tefillin because they're a klishma to the head. So I think we can rely on Rav Avadya. You can move the tefillin. And I did like that. I think that's fine to rely on. In terms of the banana peel on the chumash, so that nobody says banana peels if they're from before Shabbat. Or actually, banana peels before Shabbat might be mukseh because they're throwing their garbage and they're not useful. Nobody eats banana peels. I don't even think the pets today eat banana peels. However, I don't know, do monkeys eat banana peels? I don't know. But what I'll say is, Ramosha's opinion, if you had something that was, let's say like this, you had an electric drill sitting on the Shabbat table, right? 2 minutes before Shabbat, Papa was fixing something and he was drilling something. And then right before he was running out to shul, he left it on the table with the beautiful tablecloth right next to the candles, all the china dishes. And now we're coming home and there are guests coming. And could you move it, even though it's sitting in the corner of the table? It's not Sorokh Gufo or Sorokh Makom. I don't need the drill and I don't need the Makom. I don't need to sit in that spot. I don't need to put my plate in that spot. There are plenty of other spots. Am I allowed to move the drill? What do we say on that?
I would say yes for Shalom Bayit. Meaning,
okay.
It's like after Seudah Shishi, let's say, the Isha of the house is allowed to wash the dishes, even though it seems like it would be hachana because they don't want to leave the table dirty, it's unpleasing and whatnot. Similarly here, it could be you'd be missing out on some onik Shabbat if you have that drill sitting on the table, everyone's looking at it.
So Ramosha says, B'chidush, he's machmir. Ramosha says, the kavod Shabbat you'll get by honoring Shabbat, making everything look nice in your house, is best kept by following every chumrah and every halacha. So leave it on the table. And you'll tell the guests, you'll explain to them it's muksan, that's why I can't move. Wow, Fidush. Rishon Mazalman says mutar. Or Lizion, or Revadia, mutar. That's what I think the halacha is. Yes. Rav Yashiv, mutar. I think Lama said you can move it. Other strachim, like having a house that looks nice, is also called Sorach Gufo. It's bothering me enough that it's sitting there. That's a little bit like Sorach Gufo. Okay. It's Sorach Makomo in a spatial, organizational sense. It doesn't belong there at all. Now, that's a chidush, but in that type of case, it would be allowed. With the banana peel, I'd have to still think about it. I might be matir, not 100% because Sorach Gufo is from Makomo, because it might be Muksa. But I'll tell you a different Sorah. If something is like, are you allowed to move if there's a garbage totally full, for totally overflowing with garbage? Are you allowed to take out the garbage in Shabbat? Jakey, what do you say? Are you allowed to take out the garbage? Mommy asks. Yes. Okay. That's the right answer. Why? But in the garbage, probably there's mukse. Why are you allowed to take it out?
If you're on it, if you let a garbage sit, then it smells.
Okay.
Also, you need
it's Sorach
Gufo. Also, you need to take it out.
Let's go over this. Sorach Gufo is matir. It helps if it was a kli. If it was a utensil for isur, like a pen and pencil, if you need it for the use of it itself, it's hard to think of an exact example for that. But if you need it, or if you wanted to move it out of the way, that's allowed. If it's on the shelf, it's on the bookshelf, the pens, you move the pens out of the way, this way you can access Sfarim. That's great. That's allowed. However, muksa, mamash, if it's 100% actual muksa, you can't move, even if it's Sorach Gufo. So what happens in your garbage? You had things that are there from before Shabbat. They're useless. Pits, peels, things that are thrown out, not very useful. Like paper cups and plates, they're on Shabbat. So the answer is you're allowed to move it, but it's not based on Oneg Shabbat. It's called Graf Shalei. The Gemara says, mukseh is allowed if it's disgusting to you. So you're allowed to move something like a diaper or a dirty diaper you can move. Not only that, the post can say anything that makes the person uncomfortable. So a full garbage, you can move. And you're allowed to move the garbage. The dirty banana peel depends. If it's just one and doesn't bother you so much, it's not probably Graf Shalei. But if it's bothering me a lot, then yes, it's mutar to move. Yes, Isaac.
For the banana peel, are you able to, let's say, force a tzorech of the gufa for the chumash? Meaning, you wouldn't usually use that chumash, but you want to use that chumash to learn a pasuk just so you could move the banana.
So, you can, one thing, just to, let's see. You're allowed to move, if something is klishma toli isur, like a pen, pencil, the phone, a flashlight, those are some gufo you can move, or some makomo. If I have an electronic thing in the kitchen, an appliance, so those are only can move, some gufo, some makomo. If it's in my way, can I make a harama? Can I make up an excuse that I want to use it? That's a machloke, but revaj is matir. Yes, you can make up an excuse. Okay, that's true. However, but the chumash, it depends. If the banana peel was peeled on Shabbat, the peel is not mukseh. Because it started Shabbat is not perfectly mukseh. It depends on if it's 100% not useful. If it's 100% not useful, then it could be it's still mukseh even on the middle of Shabbat. But I would say about the banana peel, even if it is that you can't move because it's not a kli, it's not useful at all. If it's 100% mukseh, the banana peel. Let's say shells of pistachio nut shells, they're totally not useful. They fall on a chumash, they're mukseh. However, there are many other ways to get rid of them. One way we said before is graf shalei if it bothers you a lot. That's one. Isaac's solution of Sorach Gufo is not going to help us because if they're mukseh, it doesn't help to Sorach Gufo. But we have other ideas. One is if it's bothering you a lot. Two is if you use your elbow, or if you blow it off, or if you do it in a fun, and shinui or all mutar by mukseh. If you use your elbow, your foot, use your chin, or whatever, you use some other part of your body besides your hand, mutar. That's all allowed. And then another heter is you just pick up the chumash and let it slide off. That's allowed. That's called Tiltum min atzad, l'sor davar mutar. Okay, so back to the slides. Back to if we have any other things here. Klisha ma'atol heter is the last category. Then we're going to do the tefillah things. The klisha ma'atol heter are things that have a permitted use. You can move them, just not for no purpose at all. You can move them for any purpose, but just not no purpose at all. Okay, so three categories. These examples are like a clock, flowers on the table, things that food, obviously toys. Toys are a big machloka, but that's what we hold. Bottom line. Furniture, okay. Fine. Magnets, marbles, anyway, stuff like that. All right. Good. Now let's review. Let's review before we do the ideas about tefillah. We did three categories of muktzah. Three categories of muktzah look like this. On the slides, we have everything in the world could be separated into food, kelim, those are utensils, things that are alive, people or animals, and then things that are useless. Okay, that's how you can figure out something's muktzah. If it's useless, it's absolutely muktzah. If it's food, it's not muktzah. If it's kelim, it depends. If it's used for a heter thing, well, then it's totally fine. If it's used for isur things, then it's partially muktzah. And that's what we talked about, like depends. Pencils, markers, glue, whatever, glue, and glue might be muktzah because there's no use. It's not even a kli, but pens and pencils are a kli as well as phones and electronics. Those can move, start, glue, phones, start, come out. And then living things, people are never muktzah, animals are muktzah, okay? Those are the categories. Keychain, long story short, that you can move, better to arrange for Shabbat that you don't have the house keys together with the car keys. Here's some common examples over here. Okay, any questions on what I said or about these pictures? Any questions on this? Well, yeah, any, there's a million things. Anyone want to ask about any particular example of muktzah? Okay, I'll ask you one. All right, yes, you have a question? Let's say someone stuck. Yes, Amira Lenachri is mutar from muktzah. You can ask an adjun to move muktzah directly. You don't know, no hinting, you could ask. The reason being, since it was mutar to do beheter, there is a way to do muktzah beheter. You can move it with the shinoi beheter, therefore you can ask an adjun to move it directly, even be isur, because since there was a way to do beheter. Here is a...
What about for melacha? Not for muktzah. Amira Lenachri.
No, Amir Lenachri do melacha. You can't. I can't ask a non-Jew to turn on the lights. Can you say it one more time, Isaac? Hold on. It looks like my connection's not so good. Did anybody hear what Isaac said? Oh man.
Yes.
Isaac, you want to say it one more time?
Can you hear a mic or not? Yes. The question is, are you allowed to reuse a hint? Like, if you hint something to, if you hint something to someone consistently, and now they've picked up on it where they know what you mean, wouldn't that be considered straight up Amirah Lenachri?
Yeah. To some degree, yes. Rosh Hashanah says that is a problem. Basically, you should try to use it sparingly and try to make it so it's not like an obvious thing. Switch it up, yes. It is a problem. If they have a maid that you do all the time, to it's dark in here, can you turn it's dark and I want to read, it's my Sabbath, and they know 100% what you're talking about. So best thing is to try to switch it up. Not make it so it's 1,000,000% obvious. Yes, but there is a little bit of room to be lenient because he didn't say the words. But yes, having something that becomes like your designated way of telling them just because they know this way you speak. So it is a little bit of
room. That would not be okay.
It's better not to do. You try to be creative. Think of if you use it sparingly, so then it won't be an issue. But yes, if you have a maid that's every week and it comes up all the time, then yes, it's not so pashut. Last question I have. If anybody has a question for me, I don't have to ask this question. I have a question. Okay, here's the question. If someone is running late and they're stuck at work, or I don't know, they're with their friends and they shouldn't have been out so late, but they are, and they have a wallet on them, and sundown is coming in 5 minutes and they're not home, not driving on Shabbat, not talking about that topic, how you get home, but let's say they're walking distance to home. Or whatever, they're in a cab already, or on the subway already, or on the bus already, and they're going to make it home. But it's going to be after sundown. What do they do with their wallet? Are you allowed to keep carrying your wallet home in the Eruv? Although, is a wallet muksa?
For Hefsed Gadol, I feel like you would be, for your whole wallet, you would be allowed. If you had some change, I would say you have to throw that out of your pocket. But a whole wallet, I'm sure there must be a kula that says Hefsed Gadol, you're in an Eruv, it's okay.
So it's a good... Okay, I hear. You know what? I'm not 100% sure. What I'll say is this. The Beit Meir, there is an opinion. The Beit Meir is not here. All books ever have some Merubah. The Mishnah Berurah, I don't think we're allowed to hold like that opinion. So you have to judge each case separately. But I'll say in this case, you have a different solution. The solution is, if you have a bag with you, put it in your bag. And then if you have some heter in your bag and some Yisur in the bag, so then it doesn't become Bastis in the first place. That's allowed. If you don't have that, put it in your pocket. And leave it in your pocket. Why? Even though putting things in your pocket in Shabbat is carrying, it's not considered moving mukseh directly. It's considered shinui for mukseh, and therefore it's like a shinui. You're allowed to move the mukseh in a way that's not direct. I'm not talking about carrying. You're in the Eruv, so you're allowed to keep the wallet in your pocket. When you get home, you take off the pants and you shake out the wallet, stuff like that. Okay? It doesn't just apply to wallet. It happens all the time. I left earphones, like small earphones for my phone in my coat pocket. I find out that in there, my pocket comes into shul. So what I do is that when I walk home, I shake them out, or if in a safe place in shul to leave them, I shake them out, and that's it. Okay, but I'm allowed to keep walking with them to shul. Okay? Here's the ideas about the tefillah. All right, now, what is Me'in Sheva? Anybody ever heard of Me'in Sheva? Jake, you know what the Me'in Sheva is?
Louder.
Louder, yeah, one more time. Like Birkat HaMazon, okay? There's Me'in Shalosh, as we have Al-Mechir. Me'in Sheva is a bracha that we say after Shemona Esrei of Arvit of Friday night. It's one little bracha. I don't know any tune besides the Ashkenazi tune, just to start, and they say with the nigun. But the Ashkenazi tune, they do Magen Avo Bidvaro Mechayim Etim B'Mamaro. That's the Ashkenazi tune. The Sfarim, they say it. Okay, Abraham.
They say it with a couple.
We love that tune.
Oh, what's the tune you guys have? You do the similar tune?
The Ashkenazi tune.
Okay, fine.
The Ashkenazi tune we sing sometimes, yes.
Okay, the Ashkenazi tune works also. Fine. So I know that one. It's easy. Why do we do it? So here's the short answer. The short answer is because we're afraid if there was a person who'd come late to prayers on Friday night and he'd take a really long time praying, then by the time that everybody's finished their prayers, they'd leave him behind, they'd go home, and he'd be stuck out in the middle of the field outside of the city without any lights and nobody to walk with him. It'd be dangerous. He might get robbed, he might get beat up, or wild animals might attack him. And therefore, Chazal said, you know what we should do? We should add this tefillah. Now, it's not particularly long. It takes all of about 1 minute or 2 minutes, but that might be enough to help out this person that we're extending the tefillah a little bit. Okay? That's the pashtut in why we do it. And therefore, Shulchan Aruch says we don't do it if it's not an actual kavua shul, established shul. If you're doing it just a random minyan that happens sometime, not a shul, not an absolute synagogue, so you don't make this bracha, because, look, everybody there knows each other, and it's not an institution. We don't know that anybody's going to get left behind, and therefore, no one's coming there. There's no latecomers. Everybody got invited, especially. Therefore, there's no problem of worrying about the danger, and therefore, you should not say this bracha. Only an institution for a shul, but not other places. So during Corona, this is a big issue in a lot of places. Do you make this bracha? I was praying in a minyan for now, whatever, almost 6 or 7, in the YU Sardi minyan. They've been praying in the lobby. Many, many people like that, or people playing outside. My parents have a minyan in West Orange, outside. Many, many, many people had that for many months. Could you make this bracha in those minyans? They prayed for months like that. So what do we say?
Don't we have to have a chazakah 3 weeks, and then you can start saying it?
Okay, that's a good surah. Rav Yehuda's opinion is, like Shulchan Aruch, he says, as we establish shul, Rav Yisrael Yosef, like within our own, it has to be like a designated, this is going to be a shul. So there are other opinions. I will grant that there are other opinions, mostly based on Kabbalah. But we'll talk about Kabbalah in a second. But Al-Pi Shulchan Aruch, those who basically said, we almost didn't say any unestablished place, not the outdoor maintenance, not the lobbies, even though you're praying there for 10 months, no bracha. You skip that, you skip that. Al-Pi Kabbalah, there's a whole different thing. Arizal said, you know why we say this tefillah? Because it's like Chazaret Hashas. We have Chazaret Hashas, we do a repetition, Shmona Esrei, Shacharit. We do a repetition, Shmona Esrei, of Mincha. So Arvid also, it should get left out, it's chopped liver, what's going on over here? But you get, it deserves a Chazar Shas. Any questions? Anybody have any questions on what I said?
Why is that, what's the, not the Havamina, but I mean, it's only Friday night where
yeah, what's it? Good, good. Like, any yeah, other Isaac, on the, right, it's only on Friday night. Wait, it's Chazar Shas. What does it have to do with Friday night? So it says the Arizal. Very good. We need Chazara Hashas when it is a tefillah that's crucial. It's not a reshut, it's a chovah. You have to pray, then we'll throw in a repetition. You don't have to pray reshut, then there's no Chazara. Therefore, arvit reshut during the week. You don't have to pray. Okay, we, of course, do pray, and that's the minhag, and there's a good reason we're going to pray. We do pray. But it's not the same criticalness of praying by arvit than shacharit milchah. So they need Chazara Hashas only by first two prayers, but not when it came to RV. However, when it comes Friday night, he says, Al-Pi Kabbalah, the night has such Kedusha, it's a little bit like the day. The Kedusha of Shabbat is a chiyuv, to pray on Shabbat. Even on nighttime, even though every other day, it's a chiyuv, there's rachamim at the night, you could do mikra, you could do chumash at night of Friday night, usually it's a time of din at night. There's no din on Shabbat, therefore you're allowed to do a prayers, therefore we have to do Chazar HaShas on Friday night. That's the opinion of our Rizal. As it was also Mikra Kodesh. The Ramban says it's a chiyuv to pray on Shabbat because it was to declare the day Kodesh. Spiritual day, so you should pray on Shabbat. That's the Ari. So based on the Ari, the Rashash and others, basically there are ideas that we say in all places, doesn't matter where or when you are, it's an institution. We always say this as a Chazar Hashas. And some people stand with their feet together when they do it. And in fact, some people bow when they start. Baruch Atah Hashem, they bow when they do it. Some people take three steps back afterwards. There's all sorts of, or they, you know, Shmei Ka'oneh, all the different nafkaminot of how it should be a little bit like Chazar Shas based on that, on Kabbalah. And different nafkaminot, do you say it on Yom Tov of Pesach, the first night of Pesach, the Shabbat, which was, did we have it last year, I think, or this year? I think it was this past year. We had on Shabbat, trying to remember, on Shabbat we had Friday night was Pesach Shabbat. So the Shulchan Aruch says, no, you should not say the bracha because it's Leil Shemurim, we're protected. We don't need any protection. So you should skip the bracha. And there's a Mikubalim all go crazy. They say, you do say the bracha. It's Rashash, the Ben Ishchai, the Chidah, Arizal. The problem is, Ravadi takes a very harsh stance. It's bracha levatela, just because the Kabbalah says you should say it. All the Rishonim say you don't say, you skip the bracha, you don't say it. Rav Yaakov Hillel has a very long tshuva. Absolutely, you should say it. Kabbalah, we haven't been hacked. So Moroccans haven't been hacked to say, but it's a big machloka. That's all I want to say for about the Moroccans. It's a big machloka, better, in my opinion, is follow Ravadi, but yes, there is a minhag, there is a discussion about such a minyan. Okay? Any questions about what it is, then I can say like a chidush and leave us. Otherwise, actually, we're already over time. How's everybody doing? Any questions? I went over time. I guess I'll leave with that. I'll give a bracha. All right. Chazak brach, everybody. Excellent. Being able to take the left chabader, take the Torah with you. Not easy to concentrate when you're in the car.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Chazak brach, everybody. All right.
Thank you
for continuing the shiur. All right, have a great
Thank
night.
Thank you.
A great
Thank
week.
You. It was great.
Okay.